Well, in the middle of this other rollover project, they called me up and they said, you know what, we were wrong. It actually rolls over to month. How soon can you move everything to Azure? And me, because no guts, no glory, I said, 30 days. Yeah, you laugh. But first I have to finish this other project. So this was October, I have to think about that. This was like in August, and I said, okay, we're going to do it. We'll have it up and running by the end of, by Thanksgiving, everything will be up and running in Azure. And they were, and my boss was like, yeah, right. And I said, no, we can do this. I said, let me show you how easy it is to put something in Azure. So, of course, I tested this beforehand. I'm not stupid. We have a Silverlight application. So I took the Silverlight application, we right-clicked it, you know, added a cloud project to it, and published it. You know, associated the role with it and published it. Took the link from it and stuck it where in the place where we use it, and it pops up and works like a charm. And he's like, oh my God, really? And I said, yes, really. I said, the website, the entire website will take, you know, half an hour. So, and the rest of them couldn't possibly be that hard. Sales job, right? And he said, okay, so the die was cast. So over the next 3 months, that's what we did. Now, being a developer, I would never miss an opportunity to upgrade my code to the newest version, right? And everything was in .NET 2.0 ASMX web services. We had tons of web services, tons of database stuff. So we rewrote everything in WCF. It's all .NET 4. We migrated the database to SQL Azure. We put everything in production on November 2nd. I worked 1,000 hours of overtime in 3 months. Hit my date, though. So the cost savings, you know, when we first started looking at it, we estimated everything. We just put everything in medium instances because we really didn't know, and we were in a hurry to get it done. And it turned out that our estimates were wrong. Actually, it saved us more than we expected. The entire cost savings on the first run was 80%. So it reduced our infrastructure cost by 80%, and our burn rate for our entire company, the infrastructure costs were about 15% of the burn rate, and it dropped it to 3%. So it was significant. It was a very significant change. So off the top of my head, I will give you free tips about migrating to Windows Azure. First of all, never miss an opportunity to upgrade, which I already said. The second tip is to use, we use a SQL Server migration wizard to migrate SQL Azure, to migrate to SQL Azure, which worked very well for us. We have a couple of tables that are very, very large, and it took a very, very long time to migrate them, but it worked. You know, we had to shut everything down while we did all the migrations. But about 3 or 4 days after we went in production, I'm feeling very proud of myself, right? I'm going to save all this money, we went in production. Let's look at the diagnostics, because I'm anal retentive, and we write a lot of diagnostics, a lot of trace diagnostics. What's working, what's not working, any exception gets logged. Thousands. There are thousands of exceptions in the trace diagnostics. So I had to lean over and put my head down between my knees so I didn't pass out. And I start looking at them, and they're all SQL errors. They're all SQL Azure errors, every last one of them. And so I ping some people, and I get a hold of somebody on the SQL Azure team, and they're like, well, did you read that connection management article? Not so much. Okay, so I go off, and I read the connection management article, and I come back, and I say, okay, I read the article. And they said, did you put in exponential retry code? And I'm like, what the hell is exponential retry code? And after they explained it to me, I find it a little disturbing that they actually have a phrase for that, but So exponential retry code, you basically try it once. And if it fails, you try it again. And if it fails, you wait. We wait like 7.5 or 8 seconds. You try again. If it fails again, wait 16, try it again. And eventually, you know, you should just give up because it's hopeless. So I put in the exponential retry code. And this problem with SQL Azure was caused by, there's several things that caused it. One is there's a bug in ADO.NET. I know it's a surprise. Where the connection pool will hold on to connections even though they've died after 30 minutes. So you pull a connection and then try to execute against it, and it will crash. It won't work. That's a transport level error. Memorize that phrase. If you see that, that's what it's doing. So we immediately do a get, pull the next connection, it works fine. So I'm not really as worried about those. But when I have a customer sitting there waiting for their desktop application to authenticate, you know, them, that's a little more concerning. So the second thing they said was, well, actually the very first thing they said was, you shouldn't be connecting to SQL Azure directly from the desktop. And I said, I'm not, because everything goes through WCF services. So I would recommend against writing an app that directly connects to SQL Azure. And as someone here noted earlier, to always go through a proxy layer, because you get the fastest performance with SQL Azure from Windows Azure. So this went on for a few months. The retry code helped. We had fewer total failures, but I still found it disturbing. And when I went off to the MVP summit, I was annoying about it. And they assigned somebody to me. I was a little worried at first, you know. But they took our code. They took our data. They ran the stuff. They looked at it. They analyzed it. And they came back and they said, it's not you. It's us. And I said, I want to break up. But in all seriousness, we did actually test running SQL Server in an Amazon instance and accessing it from Windows Azure services. It was very bad. It was like 10 seconds, 12 seconds latency. So that wasn't an option. So we had a long talk about it. And they said, basically, we're a very small company. And our application is disconnected. The customers use the application on the desktop. And there's parts of it that run on the web, but they don't run constantly. It's not like constantly hitting the services. So they get a lot of connections that die out. And the other problem is that if you're on a server, we have a very small database. It's only 3 gig. So we're on a server with people that have, you know, 50 gig databases that are running at this performance level. And we're like, hey, can we have some time? Can we have some time? And they're like, no. So they found that they had this problem in a case like ours with a smaller company. If you have, I know the guy that wrote the Dutch guy that wrote the application that tracked all the cows. So this was a cool Azure application. They have sensors on all the cows, millions of cows, sending data up to satellite and down, storing it in table storage and in SQL Azure. Never have a problem at all. Like, that's fair. And it really was tied to the fact that we were smaller, and so we didn't have, you know, the bandwidth, and they were being throttled. So if you're on a server and their SQL Azure database is being throttled, it impacts your performance as well. And they'll also take and move your database to another place to make sure you have better performance, and you can have disconnections at that point. So there's all these valid reasons why it can happen. We just were in a perfect storm where we had a lot of them. So I have to say that it's been a year. We've been in production a year. And by the middle of the summer, we hardly ever saw the connection problems anymore. I still see the ADO.NET bugs. What was the error? Transport level error. We still see those, but we hardly ever see the whole retries. And we're anal, so it logs try number one, fail, try number two, fail, try number three, fail, try number four, totally failed. You know, so we had some last week, but they logged that they were having a problem with SQL Azure in our area. So that's been really successful for us. So we're up and running. We add new services. Our costs, we went back through and resized all of our instances according to the performance metrics that we put in to check. And now I'd say we're probably running, we've added new services. Without the new services, we're probably running at 90% of the cost of what we used to pay. So that's my Azure experience. Do you have any questions? Wait, 90%. We're paying 10% of what we used to pay. Yeah, it's substantial. I mean, it surprised even us, to be honest with you. Yes?
Do you have any concerns that Microsoft will terminate the service in your company like Drive?
My only concern that Microsoft, you mean that they might just throw Azure out?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was asked this question from my manager, the head of our company, and I said no. For one thing, Microsoft has put billions of dollars into this, right? Not like millions, not like the Zoom. Sorry. Right? Billions and billions, like Carl Sagan. So they're not going to just desert it. They're not going to call you up one day and say, you know what, we've changed our minds. You know, we're going to turn you off. Now, we could forget to pay them. It's a different matter altogether. But no, I'm not concerned about that. The other thing you have to realize is if you look at the way the code is done, so if you look like at our website and the things that we migrated like that, there's nothing in the website except the diagnostics. There's nothing in our website that's Azure dependent. We can take that, take out the uses of the configuration stuff, stick them in the web config and change the code, and put it on an Amazon instance. It'll work fine. And WCF services, the code is the same. It's what features you use that makes a difference on how easy it is to migrate out of Azure. So the WCF services, they use the configurations. We're now using blob storage. We're using Azure CDN more. So you have to find another use for that, you know. But I'm not really worried about it. So the other piece of advice I would give you, sorry about this, Microsoft, just because it works in the development fabric does not mean it will work in the cloud. Okay? Just telling you. 80%, maybe 85. And the other question I get a lot is how do we back up our SQL Azure database? How many people want to know how we back up our SQL Azure database? Oh, yes, we do. We use Redgate tools to sync our SQL Azure database with an instance of SQL Server and back up the SQL Server database. The SQL Server runs in Amazon. Sorry. We'll move it someday when we can back it up. So this is my information and my email address and my blog. If you have any questions or you want to talk to me, just send me an email.
Thank you, Robin. Excellent.
Robin, that was awesome. Just a couple notes on the backup stuff. Two things that are coming. Redgate has just shipped a implementation of their backup software that uses the SQL Azure import-export service that I was demoing this morning. Have you guys tried that yet?
We have not, but we did get the email, and we are looking at it.
Awesome. And we still have some bugs to work out of that, but it's going well so far.
But
yes.
You want me to use something buggy with my production data?
This is not production. This is a CTP.
Exactly,
so,
my point.
So the other piece of this is we will, in the fairly near future, enable a point-in-time restore.
I've heard that.
So you'll be able to essentially turn a feature on that says, okay, I'm going to have this window of time, and you can have a little slider that says, restore my database as of this point in time. Okay, so that is something that we're working on pretty hard, and will be coming sometime in the near future. So help is coming for backup. But
I really am looking forward to that because we'd like to get rid of our Amazon instances.
Yeah.
We use one for TFS and one for SQL Server.
And there's the other thing that's now available in the Azure platform is TFS in Azure, right?
Yeah, and we're looking at TFS right now.
That's cool. So, and then the other thing, Robin had pulled me up earlier because I had painted an overly rosy picture of our connection management. But everything that Robin said about that is absolutely correct. And there is an awesome article on SQLcat.com on the exponential retry logic that she tries. You have to engineer your connection error handling in a much more robust way than maybe you were used to for your on-premise application. So that was really good information. Thank you very much.
You have to.
Yep, absolutely.
Question.
I have a question. Is there any word on, for example, for SAP systems, you have to define certain SQL, patches it has to run on. So is there, basically, I think it comes down to whether it supports, Azure supports, IaaS. I mean, it's like, right now, there are only pre-configured SQL servers and stuff like that. Is there a way to define that?
Because I don't want to hijack the MVP presentations. It's an awesome question. It's a completely valid question. And I'm going to ask you if we can take it offline and chat about it.
Sure.
Because it's a very long and wordy and hand-waving answer.
We've been looking into it, and we haven't gotten any answers for sure. So,
yeah, so let's chat. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, excellent. So the final presenter of today, his name is Mr. Neil McKenzie. He is probably the most well-versed person here to answer questions. He does this voluntarily on the forums. He's a very humble man, so I won't brag too much in front of him. He'll blush. But he's got his awesome book that he just authored, and if you have some interesting questions, Neil is an encyclopedia on Azure, so please feel free. I know I'm setting the stage a little high for you, but go for it, Neil.
Broke it. Can you hear me? So I don't know, the New Yorker this week had an article about how Siri doesn't work with Scottish accents, so you can put your iPhones away. I don't have any great story about Azure, but I thought I would answer some of the points that came up earlier on. So the connection management that Robin alluded to, the Windows Azure customer advisory team has released a transient connection handling framework. You can download and use it against SQL Azure, Service Bus, and Table Storage. So that's definitely worth looking at. In fact, their blog, the Windows Azure Customer Advisor Team blog, is really worth looking at. They have some tons of good stuff, and it's really hardcore. And it does address things like the connection management, so you don't need to write your own exponential stuff. You don't need to write your own. It's easy to use. They use extension. They use extension methods you can just pretty much plug and play. There's actually a thing in my book showing you how to do it. But if you look in their blog, they have tons of examples how to do it. Someone else asked about the auto-scaling kind of stuff. And the Patterson Practices team has just released in beta the Wasabi package that you can implement to do sort of auto-scaling. So you can download it from their website, try it out. And it'll do sort of auto-scaling. You can configure it to look at kind of different times of day, different days of the week, different days of the year, different performance measures, and scale up and scale down according to whatever configurations you've configured. Then you can change the configuration dynamically. There's PowerShell scripts to change the configuration. So if you want to get involved, if you want to do sort of a lot of auto-scaling yourself, you can use the Wasabi package. There's actually a company, Paraleap in Chicago, has got a AzureWatch product that they'll charge, I think it's 1 cent an instance hour or something, and you can just, it pretty much works out of the box against your Azure services, and will do auto-scaling for you. They have a web UI you can configure to do auto-scaling. So you can either do it yourself using the Wasabi package, you can use the Azure Watch, to do it. There was something else I could talk. One of the things that gets a lot of short shrift, I think, is the AppFabric team. They're doing a lot of great stuff for developers these days. Because I think the core Windows Azure platform, from a development perspective, is pretty much stable. The storage team doesn't really do many, there's not many new APIs coming up, but the AppFabric team is doing a lot of new stuff. That's not to say the Windows Azure team is doing nothing. A lot of the stuff coming out of there is things like Connect, the more macroscopic management, the traffic manager stuff, the Windows Azure Connect, more higher level services to make your hosted services work better. But the AppFabric team's done good stuff. And like last month, they released their pub sub thing, the topics with topics and queues, and that Wade alluded to briefly. He kind of only really just touched on the topics and subscriptions, which is a really powerful feature. And what happens there is you can have a service that pumps a whole bundle of messages into a topic, and you can have multiple different subscriptions listening to that topic, each of them seeing different sets of messages from the topic. So one example I saw was a company that wants to download its inventory to many different clients. So in different parts of the country, you might want to see different parts of the inventory. But the company can just pour the whole inventory into a topic, and different parts of the country can have different subscriptions. So there can be a West subscription, a Central subscription, an East subscription. And they're filtered to only see the bits relevant to them, even though the Central company just pumps the whole thing in. So it really allows a lot of that kind of thing where different subscribers see different parts of the message stream. And so it's a really powerful thing that Wade really just kind of, he didn't have time, he just skipped over the topics and subscriptions, but you should definitely look at that. It's a very powerful addition to the Windows Azure platform. And it's the queuing side of the AppFabric queuing has got different semantics and a different purpose than the Azure storage queuing. The Azure storage queuing, if you're doing a web role and a worker role, that's a very convenient one to use. And it's simple and easy to use and fits in with the regular storage capabilities. Whereas the topics and queue stuff, the topic subscriptions and queues is a much more fully featured messaging subsystem. So if you want a lot more sophisticated messaging, that's the way to go. The pricing's not available yet since they haven't done it, so it's hard to compare on a pricing basis. But it's nice to see that they have got different capabilities, significantly different capabilities and semantics, etc. So it's definitely worth looking at what's coming out of the AppFabric team, the whole service bus and the topics and queues. And I think that's it.
Could you write the replacement for Yahoo IM?
You could do Twitter, but I don't know how much it would cost. I think that's it for me.
Questions, anybody? Any tough questions left unanswered today? Neil, I have a question. So let's say I have some questions. I want to get them answered. You're always moderating the forums. How does that work?
Well, there's probably two places at least that people go. So there's the MSDN forums. I think it's quite good. The team frequently, again, Steve Marks here answers questions. I don't know if now he's moved into a new job, if he's as part of his remit anymore. He used to.
You answer more than I do. Yeah.
So Steve and the team, you'll see people coming in, like the storage team, people will answer questions. If it's something hard and obscure that's not documented, you'll get Jay Haridas coming in and answering the questions. So things like that, it's a powerful feature. Other places, Stack Overflow. I don't really go to Stack Overflow myself. I mainly focus on the Windows Azure forums. I know a lot of people use Stack Overflow. So between these two places, I think you've got a lot of venues for asking questions and getting them answered. As long as you just ask in one place, people get upset if you ask the question in both places. Especially if you take the answer from one and answer on the other, and then you get really, yep.
Neil, when you go to estimate the cost of a new application on Azure, what tool do you use to
where I do that? I think there's a cost of ownership, total cost of ownership modeling thing on the Windows Azure website. That's probably your best place to go. I think you can plug in number of users and stuff like that and estimated traffic, and they'll come up with some estimate. So it's on the website, on the Azure website somewhere. It's like the total cost of ownership wizard or something.
Or just ask Robin.
Are you going to be around tomorrow, Neil?
Yeah.
Good. So I'm hoping everyone's around tomorrow. We got a final question over here in the corner. I want to get everyone out in a timely manner.
Hi, Neil. As a solution vendor who has customers would be willing to buy it on cloud as well as on-prem. Considering the amount of the breadth of technology that is available in Azure, the way you architect an application offering for a client who is on cloud versus a client who prefers an on-prem solution, the biggest problem is you have two different code base, two different architecture that you have to go on maintaining. Is there any best practice on as a solution vendor to handle that trouble?
Well, I think a lot of people are trying to sort of make it so they can get as much as possible a single code base and isolating out, say, the use of the storage system so you can swap some different storage and that kind of stuff. People are looking quite hard at trying to make a single code base as much as possible, I think.
Yeah,
so you've still got to do it. It's going to be a perennial. It's going to be a perennial problem. One issue is, for example, that the regular server systems, the on-client systems, are in roughly a 2 or 3 year cadence for releases, whereas the cloud is on a 3 monthly cadence. So like SQL Azure is getting releases every 3 months with new features, and so it's getting pure feature equivalent is going to be difficult. It's probably never really going to happen, and you really probably don't want it. If the Windows Azure platform had a 3 year release cycle, it would be dead within a year or something. So you do run into that issue that there will be feature differences between the two. It's inevitable. No matter how much people might like Microsoft to have pure feature equivalents, they have done things like the caching service, for example, has the same API, but not all of it's implemented in the cloud. So like caching regions on the Windows Server App Fabric caching has got regions that you can have different parts of the cache in different regions and do searches inside the regions. That feature's not implemented in the cloud at this point, but the API is the same. You can actually make the calls and it'll fail. But so it's actually quite hard, I think, for Microsoft to get pure feature equivalence across the two. So as developers, I guess we just have to sort of try and abstract out the bits where we can and where there are feature differences and try and make them swappable. But a lot of people are working hard on looking at that.
Actually, Neil, just in case there are any others that don't understand why there's a difference in code base, just to see if your answer, if I understand, is it because of the cadence? Is it because of the different code bases because of the change in Azure?
Well, there's some issues like SQL Server and SQL Azure. So SQL Server's got a whole bundle of stuff to do with file management where different parts of your database are stored, like your indexes in this disk, your data's in that disk. And SQL Azure doesn't do any of that. You have no control at all over file locations in SQL Azure, and you probably never will. Because there's the whole issue with platform as a service is trying to get all of that low-level management out of the picture. So I think there never will be pure. I don't work for Microsoft. So I'm not committing anyone to anything at that point. If he said it'd be different, then it's like...
One architectural pattern we're seeing a lot of traction with is CQRS, the command query responsibility pattern. So that might be a place to look in terms of loosely coupled, abstracted ways to do things. So that's what we kind of need in this space. There's not a lot of architecture books on the topic today. So any book authors thinking about a great topic, architecture in the cloud. So with that said, if you don't mind, I want to get everyone out on time. We have some prizes to give away. I want to thank all the speakers. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Robin.